Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock. Cowherd has the day off. Coming up, we'll get into the latest about LeBron and the Lakers' wild offseason. But first, let's start in the NFL. According to some of the NFL's harshest critics, the league is evil because players don't have guaranteed contracts. This is an atrocity. It's proof that the NFL is run like an 1800s Southern plantation. The NBA and Major League Baseball have guaranteed contracts. You know what they also have? Less popularity and a product not quite as compelling as the NFL. Maybe that's not a coincidence. Veteran Chargers offensive tackle Russell Okun kicked off the latest NFL guaranteed contracts controversy with a recent tweet storm that suggested the NFLPA should work to overhaul the entire collective bargaining agreement. This morning, Pro Football Woke's Mike Florio surprisingly pushed back against Okun, pointing out shorter contracts would be a possible consequence of fully guaranteed deals. Look, the whole concept of fully guaranteed contracts in the NFL is a lazy trope that needs to go away. First off, the NBA and Major League Baseball don't have collectively bargained guaranteed contracts. Their player unions did not establish fully guaranteed contracts in their CBAs. Agents and players use their leverage to make guaranteed contracts the norms in baseball and basketball. Their unions had and have nothing to do with it. This isn't new information. I first wrote about it in 2006 when Bryant Gumbel unfairly blasted former NFL union head Gene Upshaw for not securing guaranteed contracts in the NFL. The column is still available on the internet. Second, because of the work of Upshaw, NFL agents and players, more and more NFL player salaries are guaranteed through signing bonuses, roster bonuses, and annual salaries. In 2016, the NFLPA, under D'Amore Smith, stated 62% of player compensation comes in the form of guaranteed money. If you look at the deals recently signed by Kirk Cousins and Matt Ryan, it's quite clear the NFL is on the path to guaranteeing its players more money. But fully guarantee all contracts? Why? Have guaranteed contracts improved the NBA and MLB? The NFL is unique. Its rosters are much bigger. The game's consequences are much starker. It's a league where no one is allowed to get comfortable. That's why it's so compelling. All right, joining me now, two former NFL players, Mark Schlereth and Seth Joyner, and Fox Sports radio host Doug Gottlieb. Guys, we could probably just end this debate now because I've just ended it. The NFL doesn't need guaranteed
contracts. I don't understand that narrative. You act as though that if you guarantee an NFL player's contract, they're going to roll over and they're going to quit playing. Have you ever, when you got a new contract, have you ever just rolled over?
I have rolled over.
No, but
that's a totally different. No. I'm not playing in a dangerous sport where, again, Mark, you know, and Seth, you know, and Doug, you probably know, football is the sport with the strongest love-hate relationship.
Sure.
You love Sundays, you hate every other day of the week, and sometimes you don't even love Sundays. It's much harder, and people's, it's a love-hate relationship far more than any other sport.
What bothers me is that the majority of guys that play this game do love it. It's the lifeblood.
On Sundays.
It's the lifeblood that courses through their veins, man. They want to play. And because
you love practice?
No, I love lifting. I love playing. I love doing all those things. I'll go out and practice. I don't always love it, but I love the game. And because I have a guaranteed contract doesn't mean I'm going to roll over and not play the game. 62%, you said. A Harvard study said that 44% of the money that was collected.
I'm the NFLPA.
Okay.
Your union.
Yeah.
I can't use their information?
Well, you can use their information. Right. Regardless, if okay, so they've got a younger Jason Whitlock coming up right now that they can pay a quarter of what you pay, of what you make. And they say, hey, man, you got 44% of the money we guaranteed you or we promised you. You're good now because we got the younger guy coming up and we don't have to pay him. So, you know what? See yourself out the door. It's okay. That's not right. I don't like the guaranteed contract thing doesn't bother me at all because 99% of the players are going to show up and play their butts off because that's what they are and that's what they do.
You don't play the game of football and brother-in-law. You just don't. The game is too violent. The game is
except
too fast.
Except during the Pro Bowl. But
oh,
continue.
I mean, but you can't. That's
not really. That's not really an exhibition.
Let's set that apart let's be fair, because if I line up against you on the first play, and you trying to take my head off, that puts a whole new perspective on the game going forward. Okay, so you're not taking any plays off at all.
It's not about taking plays off. It's about injuries or using an excuse to, hey, I'm not available. Again, it's a problem getting guys to practice hard as it is now with these guys making all this money. If I'm an NFL coach or executive, I think one of the reasons my game is more compelling is because the players are more desperate than in other
sports.
Well,
listen, we've set the table for players not wanting to practice, players getting injured because of how much players play now and how little they practice. True. Football is a game where you have to do it. You have to galvanize your body. Listen, if I get a soft tissue injury here during the season, yeah, it's going to hurt. But you know where I take care of that? I take care of that in training camp. Because when I get that bruise there in training camp, that means when I get it later on in the season, I've galvanized that. That's not going to hurt anymore. But they don't do that anymore. They work less trying to prevent injuries, and now they have more injuries than they've ever had. So the injury piece of it, listen, if you play that game, guys are going to get injured. That's not an argument for why you should not have guaranteed contracts, okay? The lifespan of a pro football player, the lifespan of a pro football player is 3.5 years.
Correct.
If there's ever a sport where we should have guaranteed contracts, it is the game of football.
I'm sorry, you're actually hurting your own argument. Now, look, I disagree with Jason.
Not ever.
I disagree with Jason in terms of guys wouldn't play hard. You can't not play hard in football. But because you play hard in football, you get hurt in football. Mm. It's bad business. Okay? The reason you can't have a long-term guaranteed contract is nobody can stay healthy, with the exception of the quarterback, who are getting the long-term guaranteed deals. And, oh, yeah, by the way, it's a little bit of a red herring there, because the guarantees that are given, the signing, the roster bonuses, okay, those are guarantees, and those have increased throughout time. Additionally, they don't actually count.
44%?
62% by your own union.
And oh, yeah, by the way, it doesn't count against the salary cap, so it continues to go up and can go up. But the best point you made, which actually is the point that the union is missing on, is they're fighting for the wrong things, okay? Instead of fighting for a larger salary cap, not just the top of the salary cap, but the floor to be higher, they're fighting for less practice time. They're fighting for fewer games. They're not fighting for more rosters.
The right to kneel.
More roster spots. Fight for the right things. Fight to increase that guaranteed money, okay, in terms of how it's pooled and how it's calculated, especially the floor. And I think then NFL players would get more guaranteed money.
I will tell you this, and I agree with the less practice time of being. The issue is that players are never in a position of leverage when the collective bargaining agreement comes up, because it always comes up in March. And guys,
What happened last time?
Guys rolled over in July because they needed paychecks. So they said, well, we'll take less practice time.
I understand. But again, you're making my point. They were at a point of leverage. They were 1 week away. The players were 1 week away from causing the owners to cancel preseason games. And they rolled over. If they showed solidarity the way that baseball has, they would have better deals.
If
you have 25 guys on the roster and you got 13 guys on the roster in basketball, that's a big difference between having 53 guys on a roster.
Man, you're making
that's
our
my point about guaranteed contracts.
That's my argument why you have to have it, because you got to understand the pay structure in the NFL.
Right.
There are 10% of the guys that make the majority of the money.
Right.
Okay? Then you've got those guys that are ascending to the elite level. They might get a little bit of money. Everybody else, they're not making any money. So when it comes down
Seth,
to have a position of leverage, you know what they do?
Seth.
They're thinking about the bills they got.
Right,
they're thinking about
I always
not
say
having
20,
enough money in the bank.
I always
that's
say
why they roll over the 80, majority.
80-20 league, and 20% of the guys make 80% of the money.
Right.
And those guys
sounds
can survive.
Like
yeah. But they can survive a lockout. But it's the 80% that won't survive it.
Here's where I disagree in terms of we got people out here watching. When you say they're making no money,
Say they're not making any money.
Hardly anything. $500,000 to play a game with all the celebrities, all the ancillary benefits. Let's don't kid ourselves that these guys are out here getting abused and no one's compensating them for the risks that they take. The guys that are making very little money, for the most part, aren't on the field a whole lot. So
let's
and,
be
and
careful.
And their careers last 2 years.
You got 11 starters on one side, 11 starters on the other side. And the guys on the special teams, those guys can be replaced at any moment. So out of a 53-man roster, you got 22 guys that really matter on the roster. It's irreplaceable.
We got to move to a different topic. This is where I think everybody's got it wrong. Fight for guaranteed contract. I think they need to be fighting for more players. If more players would make the game safer and more healthy.
Why?
And more guys to share the workload. More guys you can actually practice with. Why? To be able to play longer.
Yeah. If you had more guys, you wouldn't take the beat.
I would go for a roster size of like 65 players, an additional 12 per team, and then I would require everybody to participate on Sunday, share the workload.
I don't even care about playing on Sunday, but the having an extra 12 guys on your roster so you don't have to take any scout team reps.
Expand the practice squad.
That would be beneficial. That's true.
You know, 100%. You know what's amazing? Everybody thinks baseball has the best deal, okay? Aaron Judge, pretty good player, right? Second runner-up for MVP. You know how much he makes this year?
Yeah, he's making about $500,000.
$622,000. In baseball, he spent 3 years in the minors. In his first 3 years in the majors, he makes nothing. So, again, the pay scale, the structure is completely different. Baseball players' careers are longer, so that once they make it, they get paid. NFL players actually get a better deal out of the chute with guaranteed contracts in their first contract.
Depends on where you're drafted.
Yeah, if you're drafted in the first round.
Yeah.
That's for everybody. But then once they make it, then you get the big guaranteed contract.
I want to touch on your point. Yeah, I agree that, you know, they need to expand
the roster.
Expand the practice squad. The practice squad, okay? Because, listen, if I pay my top defensive end high dollar, $15 million a year, somewhere in that range, top-end defensive end, okay, I don't want his backup on the field in crucial situations.
Right.
I don't want him on the field.
Coach around that.
You can't.
I'm talking about, look, Seth, to me, the NFL, there's two things that should be an objective: winning and making as much money as possible. Those should be the only two objectives. You worrying about the strategy and blah, 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 all that, I wouldn't want players worrying about that. Winning and how much money can I make? If you expand the rosters and you take a guy that plays 65 snaps and he only gets to play 50 or 45, and he's still going to get paid. Now you can play an 18-game schedule, increase the overall revenue, and make more money and perhaps play a longer
career. I guess my mentality is just wrong because in my career, I never wanted to come off the field. Never.
Nobody wants to come off the field. I get it. Those guys are backups. I get it. They're backups for a reason. You don't want a backup on the field in crunch time or in any play.
And I see it all the time in the NFL. I'm watching games every single Sunday. The most crucial time of the game, the guy that you're paying the most money, he's standing on the sideline with a water bottle in his hand or oxygen mask on his face, and I got a backup in that can't even get to the quarterback. I'm paying that guy to play. I want him on the field.
We have had in these collective because we have negotiated for the wrong things, and I'm 100% with you on that. We have negotiated practice out of a game that requires practice.
Absolutely.
There is no greater skill than moving a man from point A to point B against his will. That requires practice. You've got to work on that. And I think the law of unintended consequences, without that practice, you don't develop the proprioception skills, the kinesthetic awareness, and it increases the injuries long term.
Look at the unfair thing they do to me, to guys on the roster. Only 47 can be active on Sundays. And that hurt the six that are inactive. That hurts them financially. These are the type of things the players should be fighting for rather than, again, the NFL is already moving the direction with more fairness or more guaranteed money. But for Russell Okung to kick off this thing like we're going to get fully guaranteed contracts through the CBA and we're going to – that's bogus. It's not going to happen. It's not good for business. It would hurt the competitiveness of the league. There's a reason why everybody – oh, baseball and basketball have it. They're not – they don't generate $14 billion. They don't take care of 1,700 players, 53 guys on a roster. Some of these rules that the NFL has that people think are unfair are actually why the NFL is so popular and able to take care of 53 guys on each roster.
Jay, there's also the issue, though, of player safety. And we can poo-poo it all we want, okay? But current NFL players, they don't want to end up, you know, with with any ALS, with Parkinson's, with any, I mean, the 28 mm-hmm. surgeries that you went through, right? I mean, these guys go through torture with their bodies after they're done playing. And you look at Ryan Shazier. If I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, you invest everything in a middle linebacker, one hit, and his career is over, just over. Right. And so you have to balance out the fact that, look, on some level, you're trying to protect yourself from yourself, even though you know you got to practice to be great. But the more that you practice, the more pounding that you take, and the more pounding that you take, the more likely you are to suffer a debilitating brain injury when you're done playing. It's not an easy solution.
There was always a difference for me. There were times where I didn't practice, and I didn't play well. If I played well, it's because I took what I learned in the classroom through film study and game plan study, and I applied it Wednesday through Saturday in practice. And when I did that, I had the full confidence that I could go out on the field and accomplish everything that I need to accomplish. If you showed me something, I knew what you were doing ahead of time. But when you take guys out of that mode, it affects.
Here's my point.
These things that you guys are talking about, they affect the quality of the product.
Everybody in the NFL, to me, can play at some level enough for a fan to enjoy the product. If I'm a Warren Sapp, if I'm Seth Joyner, if I could make the same amount of money for playing 50 snaps a game and playing at crunch time and in all the important downs as I can playing 65 and I can make as much, if not more, money, those are the type of things I would be fighting for rather than going off on this pie in the sky and the NFL should do with leagues that don't make nearly as much money as them do. That's what everybody's arguing.
Yeah.
Let's adopt all the rules that everybody else is doing that's not as successful as we are.
I would tell you this is that
you should take up my diet.
Right.
You should eat like I eat. That's basically what you guys are arguing.
Well, we're arguing. I think the thing that bothers NFL players more than anything, and I understand the business aspect of this for owners, right? I also understand that there's probably 8 owners in this league that really want to win a championship. That's about it. The other guys are just watching the value of their franchise grow year after year.
I think if
a championship comes, great. But the bottom line is, I understand the business aspect of it. The thing that irritates me as a former player is to say that we'd all roll over if we got guaranteed contracts. It's 16 games. That to me is the compelling part of the NFL. It's not the guaranteed contracts or the lack of guaranteed contracts. It is there's 16 games, so every one of those damn things is important. Walk into a facility on Monday after a loss, and I'm telling you what, it's a miserable place to be, and the coaches are, I mean, they're on you. Walk into baseball after a loss, one loss. Hey, it's 162 games. We don't care.
You're actually making his point kind of for him.
No, the guarantee is not going to cause you to roll over.
No, they call it an NFL not for long because if you don't play well, you don't play hard, you're gone.
But you talk about the popularity. The reason why the NFL is more popular than everybody else is just the point he made.
There's a lot of reasons.
Hi, guys. It's the Herd, Colin Cowherd. Before we get back to Speak for Yourselves podcast, I want to tell you about Toyo Tires. UFC fighters are tough. You know what else? Toyo Tires. That's why Toyo has been around and a proud sponsor of UFC. Like the fighters, they're built for battle. It's an all-or-nothing philosophy. Aggressive design, durability, on- and off-road capabilities. Yes to all of them. Living life on the highway? Toyo, T-O-Y-O, has you covered. No matter what you drive, Toyo has what you need. And frankly, the tires just look cool. Nothing ruins your day faster than being stranded on the side of a road with a flat tire. Any vehicle, any terrain, all or nothing. The next time you need tires, ask for Toyo. To experience more, visit T-O-Y-O, toyotires.com/UFC. toyotires.com/UFC. Now, let's get back to the show.
All right, welcome back. Mark Schlereth and Seth Joyner are back. Let's move to Philadelphia, where despite leading the Eagles on a heroic run to the Super Bowl last season, Nick Foles still insists he's perfectly content to be Carson Wentz's backup. As the Super Bowl MVP explained in a recent new interview, he thinks there's more to life than being a starting quarterback.
I would love the opportunity to lead a team in the right situation. I'm not just going to step into a situation that I don't enjoy the people I'm working with. I don't necessarily like the offense. It's not fun. I want to enjoy where I work. I want to be with people that, though, I mean, there's GMs listening to what I'm saying right now say, I don't want a guy like that. He's got to, everything's got to be football. He's got to want to be a starting quarterback. He's got to want these things. And quite frankly, I don't want to play for you because you're not going to get who I am.
Yeah, Nick Foles sounds really humble there, but to me, he sounds like a guy that doesn't want the responsibility of being a starting quarterback. He doesn't want the pressure of being a starting quarterback. And you know what? It's fine. I'm not beating him up. He's that guy that doesn't want that kind of responsibility, doesn't want that kind of pressure and spotlight. But that's not humility. That's fear.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that. I don't buy that at all. I think he's been down that road. He went to the Rams under Jeff Fisher. He got beat up. He was ready to quit playing football. He was so disappointed in the game. And then Andy Reid gave him an opportunity to get a year of football rehab, and now he's a Super Bowl MVP. He understands that there's a handful of teams out there that you can go to, and they can create a system in with which you fit in, and you can have success. I don't care who you are. There's a bunch of teams in this league that you're going to go to, and it's going to be miserable for you. You're not going to win. You're going to get beat up. And it's not gonna be. He's realistic. He knows that you could demand a trade and go to the Cleveland Browns or go to a couple other organizations, and you're gonna lose every single year in and year out. And he knows that that's not a ton of fun.
This is smart, in my opinion, smart, because this guy had a negative experience going to the Rams. He was literally out of the game, contemplating retiring for good when Doug Peterson called him back. Now, I cover this team. So, this team is the most uniquely different team that I've seen in a long time. And I'm not saying that biasly because I used to play for the Eagles. Speaking truthfully, this is what makes this team so uniquely different and why they won the Super Bowl last year. For this reason, when Carson Wentz went down last year, one of the first questions that everybody asked Nick Foles was about, okay, you're the starter now. He was like, this is Carson Wentz's football team. He knows that Carson Wentz is the future of this football team. And for him to be in that position and admit that he's okay with that, why are we killing the guy? Listen, they had him under contract for another year. They sweetened his deal to keep him as an insurance policy. Okay, so why should he be in a hurry to leave a place like Philadelphia where he's revered right now?
Is this the mentality that you all had when you were in the NFL? I'm fine being a backup. Well, I'm good.
No, because neither of us were backups. We're both starters. And
he just won. Were you MVPs of a Super Bowl?
No.
He just won the MVP, took him on a run.
Right, but here's the deal. Jason, he can be a free agent next year. And then you know what? He can handpick a system and a coach in a place where he knows he can have success. Right now, he's a tradable commodity. And if you're traded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Dirk Cutter runs a system that you don't really care for, like, what are the odds of you having success in a system like that? So why not collect my $9, $10 million this year, you know, bail out Carson Wentz if he's not healthy enough during the course of the regular season or if he needs a couple of breaks during the season, and then become a free agent and go, okay, there's team A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I'm still young. I'm still in my prime as a quarterback. I can handpick the perfect situation with the coach that I want to play for, and that's where I'm going to go have success.
That sounds good, and it makes some sense.
Right.
But he just said what he said, and he knew exactly how it sounded, that there are GMs and coaches listening to that going, this dude, he don't really want it. He's not desperate to be a starting quarterback. There's 32 starting quarterback jobs in the NFL. It's the most coveted position in all of sports. In all of sport. And this dude doesn't want one. Unless he can handpick or blah, blah. It's not, I'm with the GMs. They're a little bit put off by it. He's comfortable being a backup. And this is what we were talking about in the previous segment about guys getting comfortable. And the NFL is built in a way to make you uncomfortable. This dude's comfortable being a backup. And that's why I'm sitting here. I don't guarantee contracts for guys that play in a game that's this hard and has this much pressure because there's all kinds of ways to lay down.
What he's saying,
and that's what I just heard from Nick Foles. He's laying down.
What he's saying, Jason, is that I committed career suicide by becoming a member of the Rams. I'm not going to make that mistake again.
How was it career suicide? He just won the MVP. Listen,
He survived. If anything, survive makes you stronger. After his success in Philadelphia with Chip Kelly, he went to the Rams.
Right.
Total wrong fit.
Got it.
And it just stole every love of the game that was in him.
Stole his heart.
Exactly. So you're talking about a guy that went into that situation, that contemplated walking away from the game that he loves. And what he's saying out loud and clear that you're not hearing is that I'm not going to fall for that again. I'm not going to make that same mistake again. Let me summarize it this way.
Neither you guys don't have experience dating supermodels. I've dated a ton of them. When you get a chance to date a supermodel, it doesn't matter how bad the experience was. You want to get back on that bicycle. That's what Nick Foles should be doing.
Hi, I'm Alexi Lalas. I used to play soccer back in the 1900s for the U.S. Now you can find me talking about soccer this summer during the World Cup on Fox. Now through July 15th, you can get daily FIFA World Cup updates from me through your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, Alexa, play the Fox Sports Flash Briefing, and you'll get the latest tournament news straight from Russia. Alexa and Alexi, now that's a winning team. Don't forget to watch the 2018 FIFA World Cup all tournament long live on Fox and FS1.
All right, welcome back. I'm joined now by Fox NBA analyst Chris Broussard and Fox Sports Radio host Doug Gottlieb and the founder of The Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to the Lakers, who have a lot of people scratching their heads after putting a bizarre supporting cast around LeBron James, including head cases like Lance Stevenson and Rajon Rondo and career Shaqtin' a Fool star JaVale McGee. But according to a new ESPN report, it was all part of a plan Magic discussed with LeBron before he signed, a plan that reportedly includes an on-court strategy of playing at a faster pace and putting LeBron in the post. I'm not buying the report. No offense to Ramona Shelbourne or Brian Windhorst, two people I respect a great deal. I'm just not buying it. I don't think Magic went over to LeBron's house on Saturday or whatever day that was and, man, we're going to get Rajon Rondo and Lance Stevenson and JaVale McGee, and this is going to be great. I just don't. If that's the conversation they had, LeBron's crazy. And so I just don't buy it. I think it's an excuse for the fact that they've been a little bit inadequate in surrounding LeBron with the right players.
I buy it, and it might not have been as neatly packaged as the article made it seem. I'm sure that wasn't the case. But I do buy that this was the conversation. And look, I like the idea of LeBron James playing in a system rather than being the system. Because I've said for years, when he's the system, you're going to be really good. And if you got some decent talent, you're going to be a contender. But you're not going to beat a group of smart, intelligent players that can shoot the basketball and play as a team, like San Antonio and Golden State, the teams that keep beating him in the finals. So I like this idea. It'll be easier on him if he plays some in the post, at the elbows, in the wing, off the ball. He can get his 25 to 30 points off the ball. And if he can run the floor like he did last year, maybe just for these next 2 years or whatever, that could be a good fit with Lonzo, because one thing Lonzo can do is push that ball on the pass. So I like this idea. You got to get some shooters, obviously.
Yes.
You can't win with – this is like a Showtime team Magic's trying to build for the 80s.
Well, with the exception of the stars that Showtime had, and they are devoid of stars. I do buy it a little bit more than you do, Jason. And I think some of this is the influence of Kobe Bryant, because Kobe talked about it on Detail. He talked about it when I had him on the radio the other day. He's told a lot of people, and he's even told LeBron James, hey, man, you want to last here into your 30s? You got to play out of the post. That's what Mike did. That's what I did. That's what you got to do. And that's where I think the playing out of the post comes into it. Now, you got to have shooters on the weak side. And I think when you look at the current roster, though they were second to last in three-point shooting last year in the NBA, they got young players who are going to improve. Lonzo's shot is screwed up, but he's going to make more shots. And then you have Ingram, you got Kuzma, you have Josh Hart. Those guys are going to improve in their time in the league. And so what they wanted was some dogs, some guys that are competitors, some guys that he respects that they're going to get after. They're going to get more out of what they have left. And look, dude, there wasn't much on the market. It was a terrible market. And so what'd they do? Let's just be as competitive as we can the first year, see what we can get, And then they're all signed to one-year contracts. And if they have bad attitudes, they're not good enough, they're gone. We're getting our two other stars next year.
I got to side with these gentlemen, Whitlock. The word I keep coming back to is trust, okay? He trusts LeBron, trusts Magic Johnson. I don't think there was any trust with Dan Gilbert. That's why he kept signing the one-plus-one deals. This one, four-year commitment. There's an out after year three, but that's a serious trust thing with Magic. He believes, whether it's Kobe and Magic, but the Laker entire front office, that they can put a team together in. I don't know why people are hating on this team, honestly. This was the Lakers were the third youngest team in the league last year. LeBron played for the oldest in Cleveland. Now you add veterans like Lance, who's been in playoff wars, JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo. Listen,
pedigree.
Hey, but by the way, Doug, he's had a great career. If Lonzo Ball has as good a career as Rondo had, that would be a success because Rondo's had
a great career.
Rajon Rondo.
He's supposed to be better than Rondo.
Rajon Rondo and I think Lance Stephenson. Over the past couple years, they played on like 11 different teams. You know, they've been everybody's tried to make it work with these guys. I'm just not buying it. And then your point about LeBron not being the system and playing in a system, I agree with you. But David Blatt tried to install a system.
That's true.
And I remember watching the first game, and I saw LeBron go, second half, I'm done with the system. Give me the ball. All this running around and setting screens.
Well, look,
potential for that.
No question.
If he sees it not working, he'll go to his instincts and get the ball and do what he always does.
There's two people on this roster who weren't hired by Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson. Brandon Ingram's one. Okay, he was drafted. He was drafted by the previous regime. Okay, and Luke Walton's the other. He was hired by Jeannie Buss. He wasn't hired by Pelinka. Wasn't hired by Magic. And that's where the story of him not communicating at all with Luke does perk up your ears. But let's catch our breath and remember, if things go right, Rondo's not going to be a starter. If things go right, Lance isn't going to be a starter. And so if you say, are those two pretty good bench players? Yeah. And you know what? JaVale McGee was good this year. Matter of fact, Steve Kerr made a mistake. Should have played him against the Rockets, and they wouldn't have been as big a mess as they were in. He fixed that mistake and played him in the finals, and he was damn good in the NBA Finals. He's not great, but considering the market that was out there, considering the young roster that they have, they got some dogs. They got some guys that have competed at a high level, and I think LeBron thinks he can be a good influence.
Awesome in the JBA. I would put him in the JBA with our ball championship pedigree team, or the Big Three. I would put him in the Big Three. He'd be dominant in the Big Three. All right, to a guy the Lakers are still hoping to add, Kawhi Leonard, though he might not be interested anymore. After LeBron signed in L.A., it was reported Kawhi was now more interested in joining the Clippers, not wanting to play second fiddle. But now ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski says Kawhi doesn't want to play for the Clippers either because he'd still be in LeBron's shadows. I don't get this, and I'm starting to go a little Ricky Williams with Kawhi. I know Kawhi doesn't talk, and so this is all second, third hand information or someone close to Kawhi, blah, blah, blah. Kawhi's quirky. He doesn't get along with Greg Popovich, and it's fine for me. I'm a media person. I don't like Greg Popovich, but if I'm Kawhi Leonard and a guy just turned me into the second best player in the league, I would get along with Greg Popovich. Kawhi Leonard, I'm putting a little buyer beware tag on him. He's a little quirky. He's a little different. He's got some Ricky Williams in football. You remember the running back?
Yep.
A little eccentric and off, and wasn't performed well, but didn't have the career that
He's Ricky Williams minus the weed issue, right?
Yeah.
Right. You agree with that?
I think we are raising a generation of dudes that are a little bit off in the NBA. Okay, what'd they say about Trae Young and Michael Porter Jr.? Okay, two guys that teamed up in AAU. You ask any NBA guy, they look the part. But they just don't interact with human beings nearly like a lot of guys.
Just this generation.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Kyrie Irving, kind of same way. Earth is flat, just kind of thinks a little bit differently. And Karl Anthony
Towns. Kid millionaires.
Karl Anthony Towns, right? And Karl Anthony Towns doesn't get along with Jimmy Butler because Jimmy Butler is a real dude and he struggles to have a normal conversation and Jimmy Butler's not with it. So you're not wrong in that Kawhi Leonard is a little bit different. I don't think he's as far different as the others that I've mentioned, but that's a problem with some of these young prodigies in the NBA is they lack the social skills to simply interact with people. People don't have conversations anymore. I had a college coach tell me, it's a great line. He's like, look, if I put five cell phones on all of their chairs during a timeout, we'd get tons of stuff accomplished. But we don't have cell phones, so they actually have to talk to one another, and it's a disaster. Nobody says anything anymore. This is a problem more generational-wise than just on Kawhi Leonard.
Killing Kawhi too much? 6 years in the league. First 6 years, no problems. Quiet guy. Improved in points and assists per game every year. And then all of a sudden he has a year where he's hurt and his teammates backstab him and now he's a Ricky Williams problem? I feel like this is a little knee-jerk, guys. We're going after him a little hard. Again, his team was backstabbing him in the press. You do that?
Hold on.
They actually front-stabbed.
Hold for one second. Play the Tony Parker clip, this brutal backstabbing that sent this guy out. This actually proves my point. Play the clip. This proves my point.
Just stay positive. I've been through it. It was a rehab for me, too, for 8 months, you know, so same kind of injury. My mind was 100 times worse, but same kind of injury, and just try to stay positive.
Dude, that's not
100 times
worse? What are you talking about?
That's not a calculated shot.
He's right. Look, knowing Tony Parker.
That's not a calculated
shot. I've talked to Tony Parker enough to know he doesn't have an edit button. I don't know if it's a cultural thing or whatever. Right. He just says what he says. Now, that was a harsh comment, but did Tony mean it like, I'm going to take a shot at...
Well, he could have easily apologized.
I think he could have apologized. Tony is like...
I had the same injury, only mine was 100 times worse. He is soft.
That's what he believes. Yeah. That's what he...
I understand. Okay. That's a shot at your teammate.
Why?
No. Look, here's the... With all due respect to Woj, I have great respect for, I don't buy that he doesn't want to play with the Clippers now because LeBron's in L.A. If he doesn't want to play for the Lakers, which is not true either, because LeBron's there and doesn't want to play for the Clippers because LeBron's in L.A., doesn't want to play for the Spurs, doesn't want to sign in Philly. I mean, then you're right. Then he's a lunatic. He doesn't know what he wants. I don't think that's the case.
My point about the Tony Parker thing, if someone I work with is caught on tape saying that about me, I'm just sorry. It doesn't do anything to me. He's not taking a pot shot. This dude was just saying something in the meeting. It wasn't like it was, oh, I'm about to get asked a bunch of Kawhi questions. He got asked a Kawhi question. He gave an authentic answer that wasn't intended as a pot shot. In writing, it looks like a pot shot. When I watch it, I'm like, this dude, Kawhi, is a little too sensitive.
No, because he's calling him soft. He's calling into question whether or not he could play through injury.
It doesn't happen.
Tell me when else it happens.
My best.
No, in basketball.
I'm about to. Okay. I'm about to answer your question. My first day of football practice as a high school player, my favorite, Tony Burchett, called me the P word out in front of everybody.
Which is what Tony Parker just did.
Made me a better player. My first day of practice as a sophomore totally changed me as a player. From that moment on, I tried to annihilate everybody. Tony Burchett, love him to death. Tony, I know you're watching. He's one of my best friends. He's obviously older, but he's one of my best friends. Kawhi's got to get
thick. Tell me when it happened in professional sports.
6 years together, and that's what you get.
Whether that happened or not, he wanted out of San Antonio.
All right, welcome back. Chris Broussard, Doug Gottlieb, and Jason McIntyre back. Let's move to San Antonio, where the Spurs first-round draft pick Lonnie Walker sparked some reaction on social media yesterday after tweeting out a controversial anti-4th of July message on America's birthday. The tweet, which has since been deleted, said, quote, "We'll never celebrate 4th of July. Know your history and stay woke." Listen, I'm not going to beat up Lonnie Walker. I was a 19-year-old kid and rebellious and thought a lot of silly things and didn't have social media gassing me up or for me to express my silly and stupid thoughts. But I do think this is an example of why I think athletes, and particularly young athletes, should be very leery about even participating in social media. It is so negative, and it baits you into such a negative mindset. This is how you make mistakes like this. The kid deleted the tweet, not gonna beat him up. I've done some research on him. The whole message was off his brand. He's been pretty celebrated as a pretty good guy. And so, mistake, stay off of social media is my...
Look, even as the tweet was misguided, I like the fact that he's shown some knowledge of Black history, some racial consciousness, and some level of commitment to Black people. It's misguided. I would say, let's take that and gear it in a positive direction. And I would say to him, look, you want to be a revolutionary? You want to be woke? The most revolutionary thing a black man can do in 2018 in America is partner with a wife and raise strong, intelligent black kids that are committed to the upliftment of black people and have an appreciation for their race.
That church off up in here.
Well, that's the truth. And speaking of church, keep the social and moral values that you grew up with in church or the mosque or the temple. Because when you get in mainstream America, they try to take those away from you and change you. And black people are the most religious people in this country. And then finally, I would say to Lonnie, use your platform, your wealth, your connections, your influence, whatever you get as an NBA player, to help improve the educational, economic, and employment opportunities for African-American people. That's being woke, and that'll be do more than kneeling or not celebrating certain holidays.
He did just spend 6 months in college, so he didn't maybe get the full amount of education, but isn't it at least partially fair to say, hey, when the Declaration of Independence was signed, life, liberty, pursuit of justice, black men were only considered 2/3 of a human being?
Let me just say something about going back in history and this was said or this happened in 1776, 1815. There's a lot of things that happened in the past that aren't true now. Times change, people change, laws change, countries change. And so if we as black people are gonna have the position of, oh, because things were this way 200 years ago, therefore we can't do X, Y, and Z. Again, as I pointed out this morning, the Democratic Party defended slavery.
Sure.
And now black people support the Democratic Party. So just like a political party can change, a country can change, people can change, times can change, and we have to be willing to move on and let time change. And so Chris, I thought you said more than a mouthful and things that I really believe in, and I'm very glad you said it here on this show. McIntyre, jump
in. Here's where I would think you guys would probably agree with this. We're at the point now where high school sports, starting with high school, need to have like a mandatory social media class where any athlete, whether you're field hockey, tennis, I don't care, you need to get in a classroom and understand the severity of stuff like this. Because Lonnie Walker's getting put on blast here on TV shows, radio shows across the country, and it's not easy to remove that stain from the internet. That's on there. And if you look at colleges, Whitlock, I think you need it in high school, just 30 minutes, that's it. These are the ramifications, they whether you're Dante that. DiFincenzo,
they
and again,
do that.
Yeah, particularly at major universities, they do.
Well, Lonnie Walker clearly didn't get any
education. You don't have some takes that you're not proud of when you first started the big league?
This isn't a take in
sports, but when
Doug.
You are not, when you're 19, you're 19 years
I'm
old.
I'm glad social media wasn't around, that's for sure.
But the point I was kind of getting to is, like, look, he's actually a snapshot of what we've done with some of these players. We've sped up the process so much that he's a little bit educated on what happened and what they talked about during the Declaration of Independence, but he doesn't know about all of the different other stuff because it didn't matter. He could put a ball through a hoop. He's a freak athlete. And so we have to do a better job of educating him not just on social media and the importance of his platform, but also educating him in general of the country in which he lives in and the people and what they fought for and how we've evolved in terms of our thinking.
I would agree. The only thing I would add, though, I'm just telling you, for social media, and it's a particular issue for us as African Americans, so much of what we call black Twitter is so angry and bitter.
White Twitter's plenty angry and bitter,
right,
too.
But so much of it is, and so I actually, during the 4th of July, before any of this, I knew anything about Lonnie Walker, I actually went on social media looking like, I wonder how we as black people, what is being said from us on social media about the 4th of July. And there were a lot of people that retweeting Frederick Douglass from 1852 and basically
great
pushing
speech.
That in 1852 it was
phenomenal.
In 1852. We're in 2018 is my point. And you can't just guzzle negativity and think you're going to be healthy on the other end of it. You can't just guzzle, oh, all these things happened to me in the past, and so therefore this is how I feel right now. It's a bad precedent. I see how Lonnie Walker got caught up in it. And again, I don't think he's going to be stained by this. I get your point.
Well, David Robinson came out shortly after, I believe, and put out a very positive tweet. You know, the greatest Spur of all time, arguably. Here it is, right here.
Greg Popovich has been critical of the president.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is a guy that, you know, has social consciousness and challenges his players to read things like that Frederick Douglass speech. I don't know if he's ever used that in particular, but stuff like that,
gotta go.
I don't think he'll look down on Lonnie Walker.
All right, welcome back. Mark Schlereth is here for Last Call. Let's move to Jameis Winston, who just became a father for the first time, welcoming his son to the world this past Friday. Mark, do you think fatherhood might be the impetus to make Jameis grow up?
I would hope so. And it grows most of us up. And the point being is that when you have that immense responsibility, it's more about being a better person for that person that you are raising. And you would hope that the magnitude of that would grow him up pretty quickly, because that's the most important thing he can do. As Broussard said, you know what? It's your responsibility.
You know, I've avoided responsibility most of my life. And smart people have told me that, no, responsibility is actually what evolves you and helps you become a better person. So he's planning on marrying the woman that had the kid, and they have the kid together. Good luck, Jameis Winston.
Good luck.